VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on, settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books, contacts, calendar, double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility. There's more to iPhone.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome to The Times. To find out more, head to thetimes.co.uk.
Every goal, every game, everywhere. The Times and The Sunday Times, now with goals.
Hello and welcome to The Game podcast. I'm Alison Rudd, sitting in for Gab, and I'm joined in the studio by James Scowcroft and Rory Smith. And down the line from Kevin De Bruyne's room at the Holiday Inn Droylsden, it's James Ducker. We'll be discussing the pros and cons of a transfer window that has deeply annoyed Roberto Martinez, Ronald Koeman and Tony Pulis, and what we have learned from the opening fixtures of the Premier League season as it takes a well-earned rest for internationals. But first, let's have a natter about Swansea's all-too-predictable 2-1 victory over Manchester United.
And here is Sigurdsson. Arriving is Ayew! It's the first Premier League goal Manchester United have conceded this season. And Wayne Rooney will have to hang his head in shame. It was his error which prompted the counter-attack, finished by Andre Ayew.
Right, Gary Monk, I've written down tactical genius, which is a sort of jokey term. I actually think he is. I sat down with him at the end of last season, and I honestly don't think I've been as impressed with any other manager I've met, apart from the fact he's a bloody nice guy. He gave some sort of insight into how he operates, and it was well illustrated by what happened at the Liberty Stadium, which is he plans for every eventuality. Nothing is left to chance. This going to a diamond formation in the second half wasn't a spur of the moment thing. Every player knew exactly what would happen when and why they would go to that formation, because they were losing control of the game. He's outthought Louis van Gaal on three occasions. And I think probably before we all met Louis van Gaal, we'd have said, who's the tactical genius of the two? It's the Dutchman. Rory, am I overdoing it?
Well, I don't think it's fair to say that van Gaal's not a tactical genius, although I suspect that both Jameses might take issue with that statement. But no, Gary Monk is incredibly impressive. I always think it's slightly strange that he isn't mentioned more whenever we have that discussion, as we do about once every 3 months, about how there's no English managers. Because Gary Monk is very English. He's even called Gary, which is the most English of names. He is detailed, he's forensic in his preparation. He manages the remarkable trick of still being a lovely man. I'm really impressed with him. Everyone is impressed by Swansea. I think we take them for granted. I think we've got used to the everyday miracle that is Swansea City. There's so much that you could go at. I think their recruitment puts every time Swansea beat a bigger club in the Premier League, the scouts, the well-paid scouts at every single one of the top six should be burying their heads in shame, because the way that Swansea play the market, I think, is probably more impressive than Southampton.
But that's an interesting point, because it's unacceptable at some clubs to assemble a team the way that Gary Monk has. I mean, it's worth less than 30 million quid. Some clubs wouldn't allow you to spend so little.
It's basically this, right? So to take United as an example, we could all, I'm not a scout, I wouldn't pretend to be a scout, don't have whatever scouting BTEC you require to be a scout. We could all have gone out and said, right, Morgan Schneiderlin's a really good footballer, he's been brilliant in the Premier League for 2 or 3 years, like, and sign him. We could all have said that. Matteo Darmian, full Italian international, Schweinsteiger, World Cup winner, Champions League winner, blah, blah, blah. Memphis Depay, obviously hugely talented. If you've got Eurosport or Sky Sports 5, you can tell that Memphis Depay's pretty good. The scouts at the big clubs should be earning their money, and it is a lot of money that they get, by being able to say, this player is a risk, but he is worth the risk. Andre Ayew, free transfer. Bafétimbi Gomis, free transfer. Clubs like United and Liverpool and Arsenal won't sign those players because they're seen as a risk, because they don't look like sure things. But surely that's where scouts earn their money, is by saying he's not a sure thing, but I back my judgment to say that he can thrive at this level. Someone will go and pay, I mean, I think Gomez has still got a £7 million release clause, but someone will go and pay that, possibly in the next 2 days. Someone will go and, Andre Ayew, they'll sell him for £25 million in the summer, or the summer after, because he is clearly a top six player. And it is extraordinary that there are so many scouts, and the scouts get transferred between clubs and what have you. But no one looks and says, well, actually, the best scouts are the ones who do look at those players who cost nothing, who've been written off elsewhere, and are clearly worth it.
James Ducker, I mean, Rory mentioned Gomez there. It wasn't as if Swansea scouted him. Well, they did scout him and knew exactly what he'd be. There was also that sense of potential, because he was seen as bony light, and would he even come close to fulfilling the hole left by Boney's departure to City. So they clearly do something at Swansea where they make sure they identify players who have with a long-term picture, and they can make sure fit into their model, which again is long-termism, and we don't see it at a club like United. True.
Yeah, I think Rory and yourself make very valid points there. I don't think, probably with any other club, that the issue of scouting is so relevant as it is with Manchester United at the moment. They traditionally have always had, you know, a very strong sort of scouting department, but for the last sort of, really sort of going back, I think, to 2007, a lot of supporters are wondering what is going on with their scouting department. And this is something that's not just now being discussed, you know, as they sort of scramble for signings in the final 48 hours of the transfer window, in good players like Andre Ayew, who they haven't got, have sort of passed them by. It's something that has been sort of an issue for a long period of time now. Where are United when it comes to, like, the Philippe Coutinho's, the signing those players before they become £50-60 million pound players? And equally, you know, they've wasted a lot of money down the years on the Bebes and the Juves and the Aubameyangs. With someone like Gomez, you know, I'll sort of reserve judgment. You know, he didn't really get a look in while Boney was still there. He's had a very good run since. I think it's something like 10 goals in 14 games or something. I'd like to see how he copes over a longer period of time. We see a lot of strikers come into the Premier League, do really well for a short space of time and then disappear. You know, a lot of United supporters look at what the likes of Swansea, Southampton, some of the lesser sort of lower tier sort of clubs in the Premier League have done, and the talents that they've unearthed, and they wonder where their club are. I know, you know, they're saying that they're held to a higher standard at United, but, you know, the reality is that, you know, they're obviously been, they're after Anthony Martial now as a 19-year-old Monaco forward, talking about having bid £36 million for him. That is a gamble. Taking a player on a free, or even for £8-10 million, is not a gamble. Paying £36 million plus for a 19-year-old with 60 senior appearances, that is a gamble of almighty sort of proportion. So I do think they have issues there, United. I think they bought well in the five players they've bought, but I think there's a lot wider issues at play at that club.
James Scowcroft, let's go back to Swansea. What did you like about Swansea, other than the fact that tactically they were quite superb?
Well, it's been going on for a long time with Swansea, isn't it? You can't just say it's all down to Gary Monk. You know, this is a model that's been built up over the last few years. And I think what you've got to take into context is, you know, you talk about Gomez. Gomez is 30 years old on a free transfer. Is someone like Manchester United really going to take? Because you can only get 25 players in a squad. You can't just think, oh, we'll take him, you know. And the biggest factor in it all is the platform, the playing level plan for Swansea in front of 20,000, where there's not really much expectation. There's not really pressure apart from just being a professional footballer and playing in the Premier League. The pressure and the status and the spotlight that gets put on you playing for a club like Manchester United is 10, 15 times bigger than any of these Swansea players. So, and that is a massive burden for all the Man United players. You look at someone like Wayne Rooney. Wayne Rooney at the moment looks like he's got the world on his shoulders. He's lost all his confidence. If he went and played for Swansea, I'm sure that'd all just flow away and it'd be nice and easy for him. But that, you know, I'm not going to take anything away from Swansea. I thought they were very good.
But surely there's an element there that, and what Scully says is right, that it is harder to play for Manchester United than it is to play for Swansea, with all due respect to Swansea. But surely, and going back to the scouting, what and James gave that list of players that United have messed up on, which is quite a long list. He really gave us sort of an insight into the list. It was like an intro to the list. The list is much longer than that.
But then they've got a lot of players right. If you look at Evra's, your Vidic, your Ronaldo's.
Yeah, but that's going back 7-8 years since they signed them. You can't trade off those for a long time.
They want the instant fix now, Manchester United, don't they? I think those days now have gone, well, we'll give it 3 or 4 years and develop him. Managers aren't going to... Louis van Gaal's there for 2, maybe 3. He hasn't got 5 years to develop a player.
Well, you see, I think that's absolutely right. And I think that I'm not disagreeing with you. I was in Munich last week to speak to a Bayern player, and we talked about the way that the English clubs are building their teams. And he made the point that if you look at Bayern, if you look at Barcelona, to an extent Real Madrid, although it's a different kind of... They've put it together in a different way. You've got a core of players there who... You then sign superstars, Luis Suarez or Douglas Costa or whatever, and you add those to the mix. But you have a core of players who kind of understand and represent what the club is about. And James Ducker will know more about this than me, but if you look at, say, City, one of the things about City in recent years is that they've not really had that core identity. It's lots of good players, but no real kind of, for want of a better word, philosophy. And you wonder whether the same thing's happened to United, that they've got so many different players now. Was it one player survived when they were in the Champions League, or two that played against Bruges that played for them in the Champions League the last time they're in the Champions League? There's been so much churn of players. When new signings arrive, what are they being told about what United's defining style is? What are they being told about what United do? Who is passing on that kind of accrued wisdom, that accrued knowledge, to players who arrive? And they look like a collection of very good footballers who have no clear plan or identity.
Well, that's a good point, because Ayew said that he was wooed by other clubs, but he fell for the philosophy of Swansea, so it clearly does matter. You mentioned Wayne Rooney briefly there, James Scowcroft. Why has he got the weight of the world in his shoulders? He's always been in the spotlight.
He's supposed to
thrive on the spotlight.
And he's carried it very well. I think there's many factors. He's not getting any younger, which you have to take into consideration. There was a YouTube clip of him that somebody put on last week, which sort of compared him to 6 or 7 years ago, and you could just see his body shape has changed. He's over the first 5 yards, he's not as quick as what he would. I still think he'll come good. I think he's too good a player. If you look at his chance he had yesterday, his first two touches when he's totally lost Ashley Williams is just natural genius, which he'll always have. It's that dithering where 2 or 3 years ago it would just naturally have been in the back of the net. He's just lost that now. I think it's a very difficult team for him to play in. You know, if you'd have listened to Gary Neville's comments yesterday, very, very sensible comments. You know, Wayne Rooney's getting the ball very lastminute.com, and when he's got two centre-halves around him, two midfield players protecting him, because Manchester United are so slow to get the ball to him at the moment, and they don't have any pace at all, you know, going forward. So I think there's so many different factors there for Rooney, and I think it could get worse for him before it gets better.
James Ducker, I'm still baffled, though, because he played well in Europe, and that was supposed to kickstart his season, and then, as James says, he dithered when he had a brilliant chance one-on-one with Williams. You've seen a lot of him. What's gone wrong?
I think, you know, expectations should be tempered after the Bruges game. They were without 8 senior players. They haven't had a great start in Belgium. I mean, they were very sort of average opposition. And actually did ask some real questions of United in the final 5 minutes of the first half. I think he scored 3 goals and they were wonderfully taken in the second half as Bruce pressed forward. There's all sorts of space opened up for him and the United team. But what struck me earlier in the half, and I think that it's been symptomatic of Rooney's struggles in the Premier League, was he would drop deep or he would sort of peel off wide and run down the channels. And that in its sense, you know, that in itself, he was creating sort of space for his teammates. But the huge hole he sort of created for someone to run into from midfield or for the Depays or Matters, no one was willing to do that. No one was willing to get in behind or ahead of him, make those runs and make those charges. And you could just see Rooney's sort of frustration. I mean, at times he is guilty of dropping off too deep, of going out wide too often when he plays as that frontline striker and he needs to hold his position more. But it's not too much for him to expect that his teammates would be making the most of that space he created. And that has just not happened for him. And I think it served to sort of exacerbate Rooney's problems. I think, yes, he is short of confidence. I think he's looked short of fitness a little bit. But I think he's been made to actually look worse by the fact that There isn't the pace. There isn't the movement. There isn't the penetration from teammates around him. And it is a real issue. United, they have these flashes. They have these brief purple patches when they're capable of great moves and they score the odd great goal. We saw it against Villa. And then, for the most part, it's turgid, it's leaden. I just think it's sort of possession without purpose.
Alison, we were talking before, and it's a pet subject of mine. So after United lost on Sky, they were talking about, you know, they've got 36 hours to fix this in the transfer window. Is the problem, and Strowey and Ducker will both know, again, be better qualified than me to talk about this, but is the problem, short of signing a Ronaldo or a Messi or Gareth Bale, which I think is relatively unrealistic, that you could chuck in pretty much any player into that United team, and they might improve things a little bit, but I don't think the core problem is you need to sign more players. I think the problem is that the system that Van Gaal has them playing, A, kind of doesn't suit them, and B, and this is the bigger issue, doesn't have the desired effect. Whatever Van Gaal's doing, as James said, that they have these moments where they play quite well, they have certain games where they look all right, but I've not seen them for the last 15 months since he came and thought, these look like a really good side, United.
Yeah, they have glimpses.
The problem is not kind of, and what football's become is this whole kind of, let's spend money and that will solve the problems. It's retail therapy on this grand scale. But the issue with United is they need to find a definable system. They showed it with Di Maria last year. Chuck Di Maria, and Angel Di Maria is a world-class footballer. He didn't make any difference at all to United because the system is wrong. The way they are playing is not right.
So would it be fair to say what you're saying, Rory, is the duo of Schneidlin and Schweinsteiger, which sounds sexy, sounds interesting.
It is sexy. Morden Schneidlin is a very handsome man.
He is. He's not working, though, is it?
No, because they are both good footballers. I think Schweinsteiger might have kind of turned a little bit, but they're both good footballers. But what they're being asked to do...
Do you honestly think Schneidlin's a good footballer?
Yeah, I do. I really like
Schneidlin. When we're talking about footballers, without the ball, I think he's good. And I can see that in effect. But with the ball, is he a Manchester United footballer with the ball?
Yeah, I mean, it's a game of opinions. I really like Schneidlin.
James, what do you think? For me, the jury's out on him. I think he can give them a little bit of purpose, which they have needed. But with the ball, he doesn't really excite me. I think he's very basic with the ball.
I take Scully's point. Given some of the central midfielders United have had over the past 7 or 8 years, I think Schneidlin is a tremendous improvement on them, and I think they have needed someone to hold his position who's very good when the opponents have the ball and who does the simple things well. I think he's a very, very good addition, and I think that he's a necessity in that side. I think that the issue leading on really from what James was saying is that do you need Schneidlin and Carrick or Schneidlin and Schweinsteiger together in that midfield? I think it can be at certain times, clearly in certain games you will do, but I think if they're both doing the same thing, then it does look a little bit more short of imagination. But I think they have needed a guy who can sit at the base of the midfield and help to break things up and do the simple things well. I think the problem is that the more sort of mobile creative midfielders ahead of him are either playing in a straitjacket, as sort of Rory has said, or are just not doing it. I really rate Ander Herrera as a player. I think he's got great mobility. He's prepared to get in behind. He can run with it. He's a good passer. But he just seems to be, at one minute he's sort of flavour of the month, the next minute he's on the outside looking in. And I think he's a player who's really not been used particularly well by Van Gaal, and has almost sort of succeeded despite the manager at times. I think he got 8 goals last year.
But going back to Rory's point and Schneidlin, I think it's particularly interesting that he had a long, long time to think about that move to Manchester United. They wooed him for quite a long time. He decided to stay at Southampton, confident that he would still get the move eventually. He said publicly it was a move he dreamed about. The lack of a philosophy at United wasn't a problem. It was more, I think Schneidlin felt, I'm going to get first team football at a top four club. I'm going to win something and I can make a difference. And he's got there, and I think the reality might be just slightly different to what he
expected.
Well,
two out of those three things, he'll probably get. I'm not sure he'll win anything at Manchester United at the moment.
But United are in a really curious position in the market, and it's really interesting that they are an incredibly rich, incredibly
but
famous
club. They're not top
club.
Of the transfer tree.
No, well, that's what I'm saying. They're incredibly rich, incredibly famous, and the top players don't want to play for them, basically. That is the reality of it. That I know they had this sort of ambitious plan to see if Neymar would come. I'm sure that's absolutely true. I'm sure United would almost be negligent if they weren't looking to see if they could get a superstar like that. Mm. But I don't think that top tier of player at the moment would consider them.
But I want to finish this section of the show back with Swansea. Quick word, everybody, on Jonjo Shelvey, recalled to the England squad. Did he show in this game why that's a good idea? James Scowcroft.
Very good. I thought he was outstanding yesterday. And we talk about Gomez's goal, and you can blame Romario. His first time ball to IU, is it?
Yeah, what a ball.
Fantastic vision. Actually, in my last season of professional football, I played against him when he was at Charlton. I picked him out then. I thought he was a fantastic player.
Did you ever play a ball like that?
Yes, several times, but only in training. But no, I think he's a great, great player, and I think he's very good. He's one of these that there's a lot of Manchester United, I keep talking about Manchester, I have them, that play backwards, sideways. He can play forward and he can break lines, and that pass where he gets it and he just first time, he knows his next pass, and he's technically very, very good. And I think Swansea will have their hands full keeping hold of him.
It was always mental with Shelvey. It was always, yeah. He always had the talent. He has never had the kind of maturity or the common sense to really kick on and be top class. You speak to people at Swansea, they say that there has been a major change in his demeanour in terms of how he handles himself. He doesn't do the stupid stuff that he used to do. That bodes really well, but I guess time will tell whether he can maintain it.
And now to a section of the show called They Have Only Played Four Games, But City Will Win the Title, Won't They? It's been a crazy start to the season. Let's get the Manchester City aspect of it out the way immediately. There's a smoothness about the way they're playing. They're incredibly laid back and confident. It's as if last season never happened. They're absorbing new signings with ease. Again, James Ducky, you see a lot of them. Where is the banana skin? What's going to stop them just parading their way through the season?
I don't think anything necessarily should. I was quite shocked at how poor they were last season. I mean, I've long said that they have the best squad in the league, and although they've obviously had, you know, one of the most successful periods in their history, they should actually have won a lot more than they have done, and they certainly should have done a lot better in Europe than they have done. It was underachievement on a quite staggering scale last season, and what is curious is that whenever they have to defend a title, it seems to bring out the worst in so many of their players. I don't know whether too many rest on their laurels and think, right, we've achieved something for a season, we can take the foot off the pedal now. And that happened after the first title win. It obviously happened last season. And then, lo and behold, there's no title to defend this time. And they're playing with much greater freedom, much greater expression. I think what one of the interesting things Pellegrini said after Watford was that they are pressing with much greater intensity when they don't have the ball, and they are recovering it with much greater determination and much greater speed, and that is very, very quickly allowing them to turn defence back into attack again. I think the signings in the sort of previous 2.5 years had been a huge disappointment. I think it was just a string really of disappointing purchases that didn't sort of improve the team, and moreover didn't ease the burden on that nucleus of Sergio Aguero, David Silva, Yaya Toure, Vincent Kompany, Joe Hart that has sort of been the mainstay behind City's success in recent years. I think that's changed this season. Sterling has settled in very, very quickly. He's had a terrific start. I think it's a huge amount of money that they pay for Kevin De Bruyne, but I'm really looking forward to seeing him play. I think he'll be a great addition and a vast improvement on Jesus Navas or Samir Nasri. And they've obviously brought in Otamendi, who's due to get his work permit today. I just think they've tweaked in key areas. Company looks fit and refocused. Yeah.
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Yaya Touré looks like he's up for it again. I mean, I think there's a big issue last season is that Sergio Aguero was not fit for long spells, and unlike, say, Suarez, when he has been out and he comes back, he does need time to get back up to speed, much sort of like Rooney, really. They just look a lot more balanced, they look a lot more hungry, they look a lot more focused, and I think the arrivals have sort of increased competition for places in sort of key areas. I think City are playing as they should for a squad of that talent. Last season was just, they were just a shadow of themselves, and it was such a mass sort of underachievement that, you know, they are back to where they should be.
But there's no greater contrast than to go to Chelsea in the way they've started the season. Rory, you were at Stamford Bridge,
mm-hmm.
and I'm glad you did your job and you asked Jose Mourinho what's going wrong, and you told us in your report that he doesn't know.
Well, I presume he has an idea, but I thought he was really, really... Jose's often better when he's kind of under the cosh, as long as he's not doing that whole stupid distraction thing. He's actually better when Chelsea aren't playing well. That's true of most managers, actually, that when things are kind of problematic, they tend to be a little bit more forthcoming. He basically said that he's got three or four players who are not performing as they should to an acceptable level, is what he said. He suggested that Eden Hazard has to take more of a responsibility to prove that he's the best player in the league. And then the natural follow-up to that was, all right, then, well, why is this happening? What's the cause of it? Is it something, as James alluded to before, that, as with City, that they've won something, so they're resting on their laurels a little bit? Is it fitness? It shouldn't be tactical
if
they're playing the same system.
I don't get that. How do you rest on your laurels? Because if you're even a half-intelligent football manager, that's what you know could happen, so you make sure it doesn't.
Well, how you do it, I don't know. I'm not a manager either, but although Stroey, I imagine, would be able to kind of illustrate that better. But I guess when you have won something, when you have proved something in the style that Chelsea did last year, where they basically slept walked. They were asleep while they won the title. Yeah, they sort of strolled to the title. I guess it's easy to just not lose a lot, not to not try, but just to lose that tiny, tiny edge that is what you need at that level. And they have unquestionably this season. They've not played well once. I was at West Brom. I've seen every game this season at Chelsea. They have not played well once. They won at West Brom, but were very fortunate to win at West Brom. That game could have gone massively differently if Morrison scores the penalty early on. They have a problem. Mourinho, I presume, has an idea of what's wrong, but the thing that he wouldn't tell us is what he thinks is wrong. And the only guess can be, Kurt Zouma said that maybe trying to find it, they're finding it difficult to adapt to being champions. There's enough experience in that squad that shouldn't be the case. And Mourinho said it would be sad if they weren't motivated. That would be my guess, that they feel as though they are the best team in the country.
But teams have always lifted their games for Chelsea over the past sort of 15
years, Chelsea,
regardless of whether they're champions or not.
Chelsea have always lifted their game in response to that, and that's what they're not doing now.
James, what's of the opening four games, what struck you as being most significant?
I think certainly they wouldn't say they're at full tilt last year. I don't think any team, but they were the team that were most organised, more desire. I think Jose Mourinho, if you actually look how his teams play, that they're actually quite defensive, and I think sometimes if you can nullify their threat going forward, if you can take Eden Hazard out of the game and maybe Costa, maybe get someone around Fabregas, they haven't got a lot going forward, Chelsea. But what they have been is very, very strong at the back, and all of a sudden now there's just one or two little holes opening in that defence, really. And I think maybe one or two people have found weaknesses in Chelsea, and I'm not quite sure they know how to turn it round. You know, obviously it looks like they're not going to get John Stones, who I think would have been a very good signing for them. Over the last 4 or 5 years, it does look very hard to retain the Premier League now, which is a good thing. I think it's great for English football. But that second season looks very hard now for any team that's won it. We just talked about Man City, how they've you know, should have won it probably last season with the squad they had, but, you know, tailed off. And I think Chelsea are struggling with the same effect, really. I think it's that second season syndrome as champions, really. And they,
but you know, you get, I think Mourinho's given them an excuse to behave like this, because he predicted it would be a difficult start to the season. He said he gave them all the players a holiday. They weren't going to be at full pelt till September began. So we've had these iffy games in August. If you go public and say, I've changed the way I prepare in the summer because I thought the players were tired and needed a break, and they're not going to be 100% standing start. They're going to take a while to get into it. He's given an excuse for all the players he's hinting at who underperformed, Fabregas, Ivanovic. They've been given an excuse not to go for it. They're almost being told, you'll go against what your manager's expecting if you start like a runaway train. It's as though they're easing into the season. You cannot do that in the Premier League.
It's also very un-Mourinho. If you look at all of Mourinho's title-winning seasons, all of his successful seasons, they start at 100 miles an hour, and that's his thing. They go strong, they get their foot on the throat of the lead, and they take it from a winning position. I think he was concerned by what happened in the last 6 months of last season when Chelsea had to change from the artistic to the strategic and had to be more sort of dour. I think that was a genuine source of worry for him, that they couldn't do that again if the lead was harder. I know what you mean about him giving them excuses. I'm not sure how much what his public utterances are the same as his private messages to the players. I don't think he's saying to them, listen lads, it'll be all right, because, you know, it's a long season last season. But I think the really interesting thing with Mourinho is that he's always struggled to build, or not even struggled, he's never had the chance to build on success, because he always leaves. He's always left after 2 or 3 years at every club. And what he's got to do now is essentially take the remaining kind of remnants of one side and blend them into a new team, because you've got, you know, Terry is checked gone, but Terry's the last kind of stalwart of one side. And Mourinho's never done that. He's never allowed himself to build a second team. And it'll be really interesting to see whether he can do it.
Have they got the financial muscle that they once had?
I think they have the chance to spend money if they want to. Their desire to stick to their model is admirable, and we should be grateful that Chelsea have decided to do that. But it is self-inflicted.
Because it's getting harder now to buy players for the top teams, isn't it? It's because, and I think it'll get harder for them next year because of the new TV deal. They can't bully teams the way they did, and it gets a ceiling where £30 million for a player to another club doesn't really mean what it might have meant 2 or 3 seasons ago. Yeah. You know, it would have been a change in sum of money, but now, you know, from next season, your bottom 6 or 7 clubs are going to turn over £120, £130 million a season. So unless transfer fees just literally rocket, which I'm sure they will go up, it is getting harder now for your Chelsea's just to pick off players. Manchester United having the same problem like they did 5 or 6 years ago.
There's a couple of points just to build on. I think the point about the transfer market is quite interesting. I think you actually look at that Chelsea side, and they don't have tremendous strength in depth, but the actual first team, which played, you know, more or less for the majority of last season, is very strong. And I think to actually improve that first team was never going to be easy. I mean, obviously there's been a lot of talk about Pogba. You know, he would be a great signing for him. I think the flip side of that is by not actually being able to get in that sort of top-class player who will increase the competition for places, who will challenge directly for a first-team place, there's the knock-on effect that the Fabregases and the Hazards and the Costas know that they are assured of a place, and whether it's conscious or not, that can have, you know, an effect on players. You often hear managers say that the time to strengthen is when you've won a title, to sort of, you know, to kick on, to show those players that, yeah, you've done that, but you're going to have to do that again because I'm bringing this player in and he wants your place, so do it for me again. And that hasn't happened at Chelsea. And I think, you know, Jay Scurry made the point about retaining the title in the Premier League. Mourinho is the only manager, apart from Sir Alex Ferguson, to have done that in the Premier League. Becoming a serial sort of winner in the Premier League is very, very, very hard. There is an intensity and a demand on them to win that title that you just do not get in Germany or Spain.
And we need to move on very quickly, because the other astonishing result was that 52-year wait for a win for West Ham at Anfield. I just feel Slaven Bilic, since he's arrived, has gone on and on and on about throw-ins. And I thought, what are you on? Why, after every result, he's talked about the importance of throw-ins. And then after he wins at Anfield, takes West Ham to Anfield, and they win for the first time in 52 years, he put it all down to the blooming throw-in.
One thing that happens in a game more than anything else.
Well, I'm not saying he's wrong. He's clearly onto something.
Very important part of football, throw-ins.
Was it all about the throw-in, Rory?
No, about Dejan Lovren, wasn't it? It's, I think West Ham could be the first team to get relegated with 18 points, having won at all of the top six. It's been a bizarre start to the season. They're kind of symptomatic of what a weird start to the season it's been, that you've got Arsenal, Liverpool, United and Chelsea are all making it look very hard to score goals. And then you've got these other sides, West Ham, who were kind of terrible against Leicester and Bournemouth, then brilliant at the Emirates and excellent at Anfield, although I don't think you have to be excellent to beat Liverpool just at the moment. It's been a bit curious. Mourinho, the one thing Mourinho's got right this season is that the middle order has strengthened considerably. That gap has closed, apart from to City. But that's partly, only partly true because of the middle order's increased quality. It's also because the top clubs are not, well, they're not what they were. They may get better, they may not. Liverpool were poor. I think Arsenal have been a bit kind of curious. They've been good in moments, but not, still look a bit short. Chelsea we've discussed. It's been a weird start to the season.
It could get weirder on transfer deadline day, which we're not quite at as we record this. Particularly painful transfer window, I'd call it. But panel, do we agree with Martinez when he says it's disrespectful to the clubs and to the players to have business being done while games are being played? I mean, Martinez, as I think he's quite enjoyed taking the high moral ground, actually. He was in good form. I was at White Hart Lane on Sunday. And he was in full flow. You know, he was saying, I've been saying this for years, you can't do business while we're trying to win football matches. It's immoral, it's wrong. Playing devil's advocate, you could argue if you have a transfer window open while the season's underway, it gives managers and owners a chance to see where they are weak and if there are any horrible end of sort of coaching session injuries during the long summer, you can put things right. And maybe you don't really know what your team is until you've started playing competitively in the Premier League. James Ducker, whose side do you fall down on?
I completely see where Martinez is coming from, but I think it's very easy to take the moral high ground here and play the whole sort of, you know, we're David up against Goliath card. I think look at the reality of the situation. Would Martinez favour a situation whereby, you know, the transfer window opens the moment the Premier League season finishes and then closes, you know, the day before, you know, the new season starts? I mean, that leaves such a short window, short opportunity. I mean, it already is, the transfer window is already stands accused of inviting sort of panic buying and rush buying and a rush mentality. You know, if we shave another 3 or 4 weeks off it, that surely will only worsen the problem. I just don't know. I've always been sort of in favour of going back to a situation where teams can sign players at any time. I think the transfer window's lunacy, personally. I just think it's adds to the whole sort of dramatisation of football and gets people excited and invites sort of, you know, ridiculous knee-jerk sort of behaviour. I think if football was actually serious about growing up and allowing clubs to be a bit more strategic in their buying process and not do things in a rush, and if they see an issue that raises its head over the season that they want to address, then they have the opportunity to do that. If we could buy all year long, there wouldn't be this problem. But I don't really see how, when the windows are in operation, it's going to be any better if they shave 3 or 4 weeks off it.
Rory, it's rude, isn't it? It's just downright rude to start bidding for a player while he's playing for another club.
So I see what James means about going back to the system where you could buy all the season up till March, when you then had the cut-off point, because you don't want to have situations where teams who are vying for the title then go and buy each other's players to prevent the other team going for the title, which is why there was always that March 31st cut-off. I think there's some merit to that. I would go the other way and say that you'd be better off. It's relatively easy. The transfer window is a completely artificial device. It is invented by man. It is not sort of sent down by God. Although it's weird how loyal people are to it. I heard Ian Wright on 606, driving back from a game a couple of weeks ago, saying, you know, that if you change the transfer window, I'm not going to stop doing the accent, it's terrible. If you change the transfer window to only a month, then you're contravening European freedom of movement and freedom of employment laws. What on earth do you think restricting it to 2 months is doing, for crying out loud? There is no argument. There is no reason the transfer window has to be July and August. It could just as easily be June and July, same amount of time. I see what James means about it bringing, sort of increasing the rush mentality, but that's up to the clubs to behave like adults rather than to sort of say that the game's governing body should prevent them behaving like children. I don't see why you couldn't shrink it into a month, run it in July across the world. It has to kind of match up roughly across Europe. Run it in July when there is no football. And the reason for that is that the transfer window as it stands breaks the integrity of the league. As far as I can tell, there is no argument to counter that. If you play, for example, Stoke City, before they sign Jerdan Shaqiri, you are more likely to beat Stoke City than you are if you play them after they sign Jerdan Shaqiri. There is no question about that. It's the same, but more so the further up you go, that the lead is not the same for everybody. So I would be inclined to shrink it into a month, say that you have a 1 month registration window, because everyone's scouting and tapping each other up and talking to each other and lining up deals throughout the year anyway. So you have a 1 month registration window. You shrink it down just as they shrank it down into 2 months. You can do it into one. Maybe it does get a little bit panicked. Maybe the clubs think this panic's bad. We have to behave like intelligent people rather than morons. But you shrink it down into a month, and then the season starts, and everyone plays the same teams with the same players.
Ooh, James Scowcroft, that sounds eminently sensible. Agree.
Sounds boring to me. Here's a question for you. Do you think transfer deadline, which will be tomorrow, is now more exciting than what FA Cup final day was when you was a kid?
I think it is, and not to me, but I think it is to most people. I'll tell you exactly why. It's because most clubs are completely disenfranchised from winning trophies. Most clubs can't get to the cup final because the top echelon of the game dominates so much that supporters of Sunderland and Newcastle and Everton and whoever, they know that the chances of them winning a trophy, much less a trophy that means anything to them, are basically zero.
I wouldn't always agree with that. Wigan won it a few years. Hull became within a whisker of winning it.
And Sunderland made the League Cup final. But these are really isolated events. They can't do anything in the league. They can't do it in the Champions League. So
but that's always been the case, has it not?
Well, it's not been quite as close shop as it is now. But a bid signing has taken on that trophy mentality. It's like winning something to fans. I don't like it. I'm not saying it's the same for me. I prefer the cup final. I hate transfer deadline day, but wish it was on July the 31st.
Now to quick hits, which is Gab's favourite part of the show. So we're halving it. We're only having one each. James Ducker, please fill us in on the fate of Victor Valdez. He thought he was off to Turkey, but now looks like he'd be left in no man's land at Old Trafford. What's going on?
Yeah, very simple. Looked like he'd be moving to Besiktas. That deal's fallen through. I think speak to Valdez's camp and they say that the Turkish club tried to change the terms of an agreed deal. I think Besiktas might say otherwise. So he now, unless he manages to find another club in the next 24 to 48 hours, the reality is he's going to be exiled at Old Trafford until at least January. You'll probably remember that Van Gaal said in the summer that he would be selling Valdez after he refused to play in a reserve team and under-21s match last season. So United sort of gambled and gave him an 18-month contract in January after a short time training with them, but that's obviously backfired, and there is obviously the danger now of him being sort of stuck at United for the next 4 months.
Rory, we expected more from Southampton in Europe, didn't we?
We did. A bit of a shame they went out, I thought they'd take that competition seriously, as not enough teams do. Michelin played very well, probably deserved it over the two legs. The coda to all of it is that because West Ham and Southampton have both been so terrible in the Europa League, there is now a very real risk that within the next 3 years, England might lose its fourth Champions League spot to Italy.
James Scowcroft, is Theo Walcott a striker?
I think he's going to have to be. I think if he's going to progress in his career and stay where he is, you know, Theo, the main attribute to Theo's game is his pace, and that's threatening defenders in behind, really. I'm not quite sure he's got the individual skill to do that out wide. So I think eventually he's going to have to nail down a central position and add goals to his game.
Any other business? Mine is, as I've mentioned, I was at White Hart Lane and felt briefly quite sad because I was watching Moussa Dembélé. And every time I watch Moussa Dembélé, I feel sad because when he was at Fulham, he's one of those few players that make sort of time stand still and you think, am I really watching someone who's this good on the ball? There were whole matches where he was not dispossessed once. He was an absolute star. goes to Spurs and becomes deeply average. And just as Gylfi Sigurdsson, who was beautiful at Swansea, went to Spurs and became average, Gylfi went back to Swansea. Now look at Gylfi, now look at Swansea. So I'm thinking maybe Musa should go back to Fulham, take them back to the Premier League, and then we'll have a fairy tale ending. Rory, what's your any other business?
I watched Roma against Juventus, Dortmund against Hertha Berlin, and Real Madrid this weekend. The Spanish title race is always kind of interesting. It's a bit more interesting this year because Real and Barca don't quite seem as on it as before. But I think in Germany and Italy, there are reasons to be interested. I think Dortmund, who apparently are about to sign Adnan Januzaj on loan, which is extraordinary, just a sign of complete mental disintegration at Manchester United. Dortmund looked really good. They scored a brilliant third goal. Juve have now lost their first two games. That's not happened since 1347, I think. Roma and Inter both look good. So I think I think the Premier League might be a bit of a cakewalk for Man City, but there are other title races to watch elsewhere in Europe.
James Ducker?
Yeah, I'll stick with one of my two main clubs, Manchester City. I was just sad to see Marcos Lopez, young Portuguese attacking midfielder, leave last week for Monaco in an £8.8 million deal. He has been sort of trumpeted for the past few years as one of the rising stars, if not the star of City's much vaunted academy. And yet, obviously, he's been a victim of the arrivals of Raheem Sterling and Kevin De Bruyne. And City will still argue it's early days as far as their production line of talent is concerned at the academy, but I think it's quite a disappointment that he was not given a chance to stake a sort of staying claim for first team place. And you've got to hope that the likes of Jason Denea, who is now gone out on loan, will be given he's a Belgium defender, very very gifted, will be given a chance sort of further down the line. Otherwise, you sort of ask the point: why are they investing so heavily in the academy if they're not going to give these players an opportunity?
Okay, James, while you're on that theme, can you answer Patrick Roberts? Why did they buy him? Is he going out on loan?
Don't think he was on the bench on Saturday. They think he's very, 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 very gifted, very, very talented. Like you say, I mean, they've got a lot of players in that position, so you've got to wonder if he's got a chance. I suspect if he doesn't go out on loan this season, he will go out on loan at some point, but it's a huge commitment in him. I think it was £4 million down and rising to a possible £11 million, depending on his success at that club. So I don't think he's one that they'll be ignoring. I think they're going to have to think very carefully about his development over the next 24 months.
James Scowcroft, your any other business?
Any other business? I actually watched an FA Cup tie this weekend. I know it's August. Local team near me, Bury Town from Bury St Edmunds, got through from the preliminary round to the first round qualifying. So I know we talk about the FA Cup being in May, and after Christmas it is alive and has started.
Thank you for that reminder, James.
No worries.
Well, that's it for now. Many thanks to my guests today, Rory Smith, James Ducker and James Scowcroft. Please press that subscribe button if you haven't already. We'll be back next week. And remember, you can get exclusive football, rugby and cricket highlights free as part of your subscription. Just £12 for a 12-week trial. Search The Times online. Goodbye.
Your subscription to The Times and The Sunday Times now comes with access to every Barclays Premier League goal. Refresh your app, choose your team, accept notification, and you're away.
The train is now approaching. Junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, road station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Small details are big surfaces, tight corners are odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.